Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your ultimate window into everything new and noteworthy in the world of food and cooking. We have a very special guest today, author of The Gourmand's Way, Justin Spring. Thank you so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Before we get started, a quick word from this week's podcast sponsor. Boxu is a premium Japanese snack and tea subscription box that will take you on a gourmet journey through Japan. Each month, Boxu handpicks the best Japanese snacks and a tea pairing to complement that month's flavors. They source directly from artisanal snack makers in Japan, and their delicious treats can't be found anywhere else. Both of their boxes, the Classic Box and the Tasting Box, ship free worldwide. Sign up today at Boxu, BOKKSU.com, and use the code CLEVER5 at checkout for $5 off your first box. And now, back to our podcast. So the book you wrote is about this 30-year boom in France, right after World War II, where Paris was not only a really fashionable tourist destination, it was also the culinary capital of the world in many ways. A lot was happening there with food. And in this book, The Gourmand's Way, you talk about six Americans who are all more or less writers, who are none of them professional chefs, who really became entrenched in this world of food and Paris and what it meant to them. So tell us first sort of how this book came to be and what introduced you to these figures that made them the focus for your research.
Okay. I began writing the book because I was interested in Alice Toklas, and I had written a lot about her in my previous biography, which was called Secret Historian. She lived with Gertrude Stein on the Left Bank for many years. After I published Secret Historian, I went to live in France for a year. I lived in Paris on the Left Bank, and I began to think this would be a great place to cite a group biography, not a 1920s, 1930s biography about, you know, the lost generation, but rather about what happened in Paris after World War II, because that had not yet really been delved into. And the most exciting people that I found were, oddly enough, the ones that our society seems to, you know, cherish least, at least in high culture circles. And those were the people who were interested in food and wine.
And these six people, so Alice Toklas, as you mentioned, but also M.F.K. Fisher and Julia Child, people that we think of as huge culinary figures, and then a few that maybe are less familiar. None of them were professionally trained in kitchens. Why do you think that was important when it came to their culinary adventuring?
Well, my book is about the idea of gastronomy taking hold in the United States. Gastronomy is not just recipe writing, and it's not just teaching cooking, and it's not just holding forth as a celebrity chef. The celebrity chef movement is something that's much more recent to our time, I think. What I was interested in doing was talking about how this dialogue on food began in the USA. There was a bit of it during World War II as people were missing the good food of France in magazines like Gourmet, which began during World War II. But the six people that I write about in my book all went over to Paris and brought back huge amounts of excitement and information about food that wasn't necessarily recipes.
Let's talk specifics. One of the things that we talked about is soups and how French soups are sort of such a really iconic part of this cuisine. They seem simple, but there's a lot going on. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Well, French cooking generally has many different levels of sophistication. So when you think about haute cuisine, you think about very fancy soups. Then there are rustic soups, which are very basic mixtures of vegetables, water, and maybe a little bit of pork or bacon, for example, or else just plain vegetable soups. French soups are often used as a way of softening up stale bread, so there's a kind of economy at work in them. But when they've been refined to high art, the flavors of a French soup can be transcendent. So three soups that I can give as examples are maybe the roughest of the French soups. We call it French onion soup gratiné, but the French will call it a gratiné lyonnaise, or perhaps a gratiné Les Halles, because it was always served to the late-night workers at Les Halles, which was the produce, fish, meat market in the center of Paris. And often this soup, which is nothing more than a slow-cooked reduction of onions mixed with water and a little white wine, and then toasted, covered with a piece of bread with some toasted cheese on it, becomes a sort of mainstay for people who are working through the night and need something to sustain themselves into the morning, often drunk with a nice big glass of Beaujolais. Sometimes the Beaujolais is tipped into the dish. So that's how sort of rough and hearty that soup is. On the other end of the spectrum, you have something called potage germany, which is basically a cream of sorrel soup. And sorrel is a very humble vegetable that grows in most people's gardens. It's a perennial. I mean, I have it in my garden, and it comes back every year with no trouble at all. It's got a delicious lemony flavor to it, which makes it great as a kind of basis for sauces for fish, or in this case, for a soup which is good either hot or cold. A good potage germany is as good as the stock that it's made from. And that's really the art of the French soup, the creation of a really fabulous stock. And at the haute cuisine level, stock making is considered a high art. And it's also the basis of the cuisine. The third, another rustic peasant soup that I'd describe for you is one from Provence. And that's ego bulido, which is basically just boiled garlic. And there's a French version. I mean, there's a Spanish version of this as well. And it exists in many Mediterranean cultures. But it's a great way of bucking yourself up during a cold Provençal winter. And it can be as simple as garlic and water boiled together, but it can be as sophisticated as another cream and egg yolk enriched soup, rather like the potage germany. So with France, you have simplicity and suavity and complexity at two different ends of the spectrum, and you titrate that according to your needs and the company you're keeping.
I think often we think of French food as such a monolith. And as you say, when just describing these soups, there are these different things. There's this sort of rustic peasant cuisine, and there's this haute cuisine that is very based on formal training. Were the writers that you write about drawn to different aspects or elements of French cuisine in that way, or blending them together in ways that were maybe more American?
Well, one of the great challenges every writer faces in visiting France and understanding about French food and wine is that it's an enormously complicated and endlessly fascinating subject. But if you're going to talk to people who know nothing about it, you have to either dumb it way down or insist that they rise up to the level of complexity of the French. Not many Americans do or have the time. And a lot of what French cooking is about French identity, either regional identity or national identity. And Americans have a minimal, you know, engagement with that. The French name dishes after every town or city. They have regional specialties all over the country. They have enormously different cuisines varying from region to region. Nobody ever masters all of French cooking. And yet the greatest French cookbook that we know in America is called Mastering the Art of French Cooking. So there has to be a person who takes all of that complexity and makes it simple enough for the average American. I think Julia Child was the best at that. I don't think that she's the only person who's ever engaged with that topic, though. And I think that each of the people who got involved in explaining French cooking to Americans, or French wine in the case of Alexis Lachine, who's one of the six I write about, is doing so at varying levels of sophistication and with the varying expectation of engagement from the reader. Julia Child's great success was as a television celebrity. I don't think that that many people are still cooking from Mastering the Art of French Cooking. I know that when I cook from Julia Child, I cook either from the French Chef Cookbook, which is an even more dumbed down version of Mastering the Art of French Cooking, or I look at from Julia Child's Kitchen, which I think is the most beautiful expression of self that she ever produced as a cookbook. The first book, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, was a collaboration with two French women. And I talk about those women, well, particularly one, Simone Beck, in depth in the book, because so many of those dishes came out of her family kitchen, either her home in Paris or her family home in Normandy. We tend to forget that there are three authors to those books, or in the case of the second volume, two authors. It is a collaborative work. So is Julia Child's, from Julia Child's Kitchen, which is American women collaborating with her. In the case of all of these cookbooks, though, there's the desire to make French cooking accessible to Americans. And that's the lovely thing. We can make a kind of French cooking here in the USA. And I think what we're experiencing through this explosion of restaurant chefs and excitement about celebrity chefs is the ability to come a little bit closer to really sophisticated French cooking here in the United States. You have a lot of celebrity French chefs like Jean-Georges Van Gerichten. I mean, the names just go on and on, who have really brought a new level of awareness to Americans without making them across the Atlantic to have a good restaurant experience.
I think that's right. And then sort of simultaneously, there are writers who are helping people have that experience in their own home kitchen. And I want to talk a little bit about food writing. Julia Child obviously is someone whose writing launched so many culinary careers, as is MFK Fisher. And these are really people who are known for being able to write and talk about food in a way that most people can't. What do you think makes good food writing? And what do you think makes food writing right for an American audience, for example, versus a French audience?
I think the two most scintillating food writers that are in my study of the six are A.J. Liebling and MFK Fisher. They're sort of the male and the female, the yin and yang of the same excitement, which is going to a restaurant and having a really good meal. When you read MFK Fisher's recipe writing, there's not much there. It's either appropriated from other people or it's bad cooking. But what she does really nail so beautifully is the excitement of being a person in a restaurant. And particularly for a woman, oftentimes, as she was a single woman, dining in a restaurant can be an intimidating experience or a rather exciting experience, an erotically charged experience. She manages that quite beautifully. Mm-hmm. Liebling was a man of very strong appetites. His appetite was for as much food and as good a selection of foods as he could manage, and wines as well. He learned menus backwards and forwards. He knew all about wines, and his excitement was the thrill of sitting down to a really great meal. He was a very busy reporter who reported on the war. The book begins with his return to Paris with the liberation of Paris in August of 1944. But he'd been in Paris all during the 1920s, sometimes during the 1930s, late 1930s, and then as a young boy as well with his parents. So he knew his way around the restaurant world, and his excitement about being back in Paris is infectious. You get so excited about going to a restaurant. If you were out with Liebling, you were going to have a really good time, incredible conversation on a wide variety of subjects, and he'd find your way through the menu so that you had a really good meal too. Maybe two or three meals. He was often eating two or three entrees at a sitting. He was that kind of eater.
What's one or a few of your sort of favorite moments that you found while researching for this book? Some of the stories or anecdotes that really brought these characters totally to life.
For me, the excitement was seeing how people from all walks of life get excited about the experience of food in France and in Paris. We have a very young bohemian who has no money in his pockets, Richard Olney, who's living on a very small monthly allowance from his parents. And yet he manages, by hook and by crook, to go to great restaurants, to have great wines, and to cook really exciting meals at home. One of his best friends was James Baldwin, who also never had much in the way of money, but they would have fabulous parties. So that's exciting for me, and it reminded me of what it was like for me to be young, not really enjoying a life so much of privilege as one of adventure and boldness, you know. I think the story of Paul and Julia Child, which has been so beautifully portrayed by Meryl Streep and Stanley Tucci in that movie, gives us a sense of what it's like to be privileged in Paris at a very special moment when it was possible to dine in all of the best restaurants and drink all the best wines for not that much money comparatively. She also had quite a good deal of money. So she's at the other end of the spectrum. Liebling was living from paycheck to paycheck, but he had an expense account. MFK Fisher was living, I'd say, on a wing and a prayer, but she also had a very strong sense of excitement about being there and about exploring and discovering food and wine. So Alice Toklas lives through some really hard times at the end of World War II. She's lost Gertrude Stein and has no money. She's sitting in an apartment that she can't heat and can't insure. She's got a major art collection, but she can't sell anything that's in it. And she barely has enough money to buy butter on the black market. So how she reinvents herself through writing a cookbook and makes enough money to pay her heating bill and buy food is an exciting story for me. But it's also so charming because it's a way in which she was able to give voice to experiences that would otherwise have been denied to her in the published world. She was talking about her relationship with another woman, which lasted from 1907 to 1946. They were partners in every sense of the word. And in that cookbook, it's very clear that they are loving partners who keep home together. You couldn't really talk about that in an open way back in the 1930s and 40s, but Toklas was able to be true to herself and her experiences and at the same time entertain people and delight people and welcome them into her world through these recollections of food experiences and a wonderful collection of recipes.
Justin, thank you so much for sharing these stories with us. They're really incredible and I think so relevant to our relationship with food now.
My pleasure. I hope you enjoyed the book.
Check out the book, The Gourmand's Way, out now, and tune in next time on The Clever Cookster, your ultimate window into everything new and noteworthy in the world of food and cooking.